All right, let's head over to the Zoom line where we have Mr. Robert Bryce on the line with us. He's an energy expert. He's a speaker. He's a writer. He's an author. He's a podcaster. He's an all-around good guy. How are you doing today, Mr. Robert Bryce?
Hi. Great. I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Now, be careful on that expert line. My dad said an expert's anybody from out of town. So I just generally call
by
myself.
By the way, we're also being joined by Stephen Hines, who also is a energy expert. And the way I use expert is the same way I use genius. You just have to know 1% more than the person sitting next to you. That's it.
Genius.
And in today's day and age, it doesn't take much to be a genius.
Yes, well, right. Fair enough.
All right. So let's get right to the meat and potatoes of the interview, the juice of the interview. Of course, juice is it the website, of course, robertbryce.substack.com. But we have a new docu-series that we want to talk about that involves the grid. It's called Juice. And what's the name of the website?
So, yes, it's a five-part docuseries about the electric grid. It's called Juice, Power, Politics, and the Grid, and it's available for free. I said free, yes, free, F-R-E-E, free, juicetheseries.com, juicetheseries.com. We have a lot of content there. All the episodes are available on YouTube, but the easiest way to find it is juicetheseries.com. Did I mention juicetheseries.com?
Yes, you did. You had okay. a great cast of characters, by the way.
Thank you. Yes, I'm really proud of the project. It took a long time, but my colleague Tyson Culver put it together. He did a great job. But yes, we have over 30 on-camera interviews with people from all over the world, and I think it came out really well. I'm really proud of it.
Well, and you didn't have to narrate it. I think I heard your voice once in the whole series. So you let your guests do the tell the story.
Yeah, we did that as much as we could because we thought the grid is a complicated subject, right? And rather than having a lecture, we thought, well, let's let these people tell the story as much as we possibly can. So we kept the voiceover to an absolute minimum. And I think that made it for a stronger project.
What I liked about it is that, each part kind of represented its own niche part or subcategory of what the grid really represents.
Right.
Stephen, he's watched it a couple times already. He calls me. He's like, have you seen this part of this episode and everything else? So talk to me about episode one. Give the audience an idea. If they're going to go watch episode one, what are they in store for?
Sure. So episode one is we call the Texas meltdown. And we start with the winter storm Uri in 2021 for a number of reasons. One is, it really is the reason why my colleague Tyson Culver and I made this project. And again, due credit to Tyson for all the work he did on it. He directed it and put together all the different elements and did just a fantastic job. But he and I were both blacked out here in Austin in 2021. And after, everything, we got power back on and we started talking and we heard about what had happened at ERCOT and how close ERCOT, the Texas grid, almost came, almost collapsed within 4 or 5 minutes of collapse, which would have been a calamity unlike anything else that has ever hit the state. And so we thought about that. And then we thought, the more we learned, we realized, oh, well, the grid across the country is being fragilized. So episode one, really, it lays it out. What is the grid? Why did this happen in Texas? And we interviewed Meredith Angwin, who I think is just an amazing intellect and self-published her own book, Shorting the Grid. And we lay out the case for what is the grid and why is this happening? And it's about incentives. As Charlie Munger famously said, show me the incentives, I'll show you the outcome. And we're all the incentives are for more weather dependent generation. And that's the wrong way to go.
I tried to find your numbers as far as munis and publicly traded utilities. Can you go through those numbers? They're just staggeringly complex.
Sure. Well, and this is one of the other things that motivated us to do this project is that the electric grid is an incredibly complex thing. And I wrote about it on my Substack, robertbryce.substack.com. And I did the electric grid explained in 10 charts. And it was a pretty successful posting because it is incredibly complex. But here are the numbers, Stephen. So we have over 3,000 different electricity providers in America. The U.S. has the most diffused ownership of its electric grid of any country in the world, and it's not even close. So we have 800, 900 cooperatives. We have around 2,000 publicly owned utilities like an Austin Energy here in Austin, which city owns it. There are about 180 or so investor-owned utilities. Then you have the federal agencies like Tennessee Valley Authority and Bonneville and Western Area Power Administration. And then in California, you have these community choice aggregators, which are, a whole other bastard subset of the system. But again, it is an incredibly complex system that's then overseen by the RTOs, by state public utility commissions, some by FERC. It's just an insanely complex system, and it's a wonder it all works, but it does. And one of the reasons why we made this film, why we made this docuseries, is we wanted people and policymakers to understand how important it is, how it's being undermined, and why we ignore this fragility at our extreme peril.
You
One
know,
of the things, go ahead, Stephen, sorry.
emeritus quote of the, well, actually, there are other quotes, but her quote about facts intruding on the narrative is just simply as good as it gets on the climate narrative.
Yeah.
Remember
Well,
that?
and that's the thing that we try and make the clear point of that this is a pro-nuclear docuseries. Let me be very clear. We come out as a pro and on a pro-nuclear stance because if we're serious about CO2 emissions, we have to be serious about nuclear. And so that was one of the other motivations is we knew we needed to tell this story, but it's not the only reason we did this. And I'll just brag, I'd maybe jump ahead. Episode 3 is my favorite episode because I'm from Oklahoma. I have deep roots in Oklahoma. And we tell the story of the Osage tribe and their battle against the wind industry and what was the longest running battle against wind energy, longest running legal battle against wind energy in American history. And in December, the Osage tribe won a landmark ruling in federal court that requires Enel, the Italian company, to remove all 84 turbines that are installed in Osage County, Oklahoma, in violation of the tribe's mineral rights. So, we weave together a lot of stories, and I know there are a lot of people listening, and I want you to watch all the series, all the 5 episodes. But I'm just flagging episode 3 because my great uncle Ernie Rapp was a member of the Osage tribe. He was born in Fairfax, Oklahoma, in 1909. He saw the reign of terror himself. My cousin owns a head right in the Osage tribe, so. I just wanted to point that out because it's one of the things that in this docuseries that was is very heartening to me on a personal basis.
It's a great story. First of all, I'm 132nd Cherokee, Robert, somewhere distant in the past. The other thing I don't think you know about me is I ran 3 truck stop restaurants in Oklahoma for about 15 years.
Wow.
Back when the interstates were first opening up, 1971, 1972. And so I spent an awful lot of time in Oklahoma. And it's such a I don't know, maybe it's because it came to statehood later, but there's something so interesting about it and so eclectic.
Yeah, well, nobody jokes about being from Oklahoma. It's an interesting place. Yeah, I have deep roots in Oklahoma and really proud that we could tell the story and that I knew people within the tribe that would help us tell the story. So that's great. And we talk about Enron, the history of Enron in episode 2. We talk about industrial cathedrals in Canada in episode 4, or industrial cathedrals in episode 5 and the nuclear renaissance episode 4. I'm, again, Tyson did a great job.
Juice the Series is the website. Robert Bryce is the guest. Episode 3, which we were just talking about, is called The Green Dreams. And several weeks ago here on the Crude Life, we had, in fact, on Talk of the Town in Bismarck, North Dakota, with the former mayor Steve Bock, and we had on Jake Milne of Reviable Energy. And they had just done a little bit of back and forth. Consulting, I believe, with the Osage tribe involving some of their wind energy issues that they've been having there with the governments.
Yeah.
And that really brings up episode 2 to me, which is undermined by Enron. I right now, one of the biggest issues I see with the energy companies, whether it's wind or solar or oil, gas, coal, it just seems like if someone produces energy, there's this mistrust out there. Nobody
Yeah.
trusts any energy companies anymore. Is this a corporatocracy thing? Is this rooted by Enron? Talk to me a little bit about that. And is that kind of what episode 2 is about? A little bit about kind of laying out some trust factors?
Well, let me just a quick bit of background. So I've written six books, and I'm proud of all of them. And my first book was on Enron. It was called Pipe Dreams, Greed, Ego, and the Death of Enron. It came out in 2022. It was one of the first books. I'm not bragging here. I'm just telling the truth, that first serious books that looked at what happened at Enron, why it failed. But here I am now, 22 years later, I'm still talking about Enron. Why? Because Enron's influence over the electricity markets has been so deep. Enron was the key promoter of this idea of what Ken Lay called restructuring. Well, it's deregulation, right? By a different name. But the idea was that Enron was very successful in promoting was the idea of electricity as a commodity and not as a service. And it was a popular idea that gained traction with both Democrats and Republicans, right? The Republicans could say, oh, we're free market guys. We're going to let the market work, right? You know, we and David Sibley, who was a senator at that time from Waco, a Texas senator at that time, said, well, you know, this is like a can of beans. If beans is too expensive at one store, you can go down the street and buy a different can of beans. Well, Senator Sibley, all due respect, electricity ain't beans. But it was this misapprehension of the idea of what electricity is that's led to this, you know, this lack of reliability. And where did Enron start? They started in the UK under Thatcher, under Thatcherism, and this idea we're going to deregulate the business. And they did. Then they went to California. Then they came to Texas. So there's this progression that we talk about it, how what Enron's effect has been. And then we interviewed the former chief quant at Enron, Vince Kaminsky. He's in the film. But this idea that you can just treat electricity as any other commodity is one that still haunts the industry today. And it is a real problem, and it's not easily fixed, and it's something that is, you know, or in ERCOT they're still trying to figure out, oh, how do we incent new generation without, you know, favoring the market this way or the other, and it's the restructuring, the deregulation just resulted in this massive increase in complexity.
Well, California's never been the same, Robert. I started lobbying out there too.
California's a disaster, and it's
It
just the it, it's providing an example for what not to do. Since 2008, when Schwarzenegger mandated renewables on the grid in California, electricity prices in the state have gone up a rate three times faster than the rest of the U.S. It's been an absolute unequivocal disaster for the consumer, and yet there were, you know, this administration unfortunately seems to be in the thrall of the California model.
Speaking of that, what do you think about the events over the last day or so?
Oh, what the flooding and the rain? I don't know about that. Or are you talking about
I'm talking
Biden?
about the press conference last night, but also
Oh,
the court decision out in Washington, D.C. with Michael Mann.
yeah. Well, how much time do we have here, fellas? I mean,
Exactly.
Well,
yeah,
I tell you
no.
what, though, that will. We can fold that back into Juice the Series, which we're talking about here with Robert Bryce. You know, you start talking about Green Dreams, the industrial cathedral. You know, we kind of looked at a different spin with the crude life, which is the industrial forest. We looked at it more like it takes an industry to build a forest because all these nonprofit eco people keep killing the forests. If we actually work together and talk to some oil and gas companies, some coal companies about some of the positives they've done with reclamation. Well, we might learn a few things from there. Talk about that episode five, if you will. What is, you know, that industrial cathedral in your eyes?
Sure. Well, let me just preface it, if I could, by just talking for a minute about episode four, because when we think about the nuclear comeback, and we do, and this is one of the focal points, where is this happening? Where is nuclear, the Renaissance, really happening? It's happening in Canada. And this sets the stage for episode five. So just indulge me for just another minute. So in episode four, we went to Canada. We interviewed Chris Kiefer, Dr. Chris Kiefer, who's just this very compelling character. He's a giant. He's 6 feet 9 inches tall. He's an emergency room doctor in Toronto. He's a recovering leftist, and he has this incredible personal journey, a conversion story, really, where he thought nuclear was bad as a, you know, when he was a kid and young man, and then he realized, no, if we're serious about climate change, serious about pollution, air pollution, we have to be serious about nuclear. So he became the leading advocate for nuclear energy in Canada, and not single-handedly. He had a lot of people working with him, but he helped to catalyze this change in conversation in Canada about nuclear energy. And now, just in the last few days, They've announced the refurbishment of their nuclear reactors at Pickering, which was not planned. The Ontario power generation is going to double, I think, the scale or the size of the, it might not be double, but they're going to dramatically expand the Bruce Power Station, which is the largest nuclear power plant in the world. So this turnabout in Canada and the fact that Canada has such strong government involvement in their nuclear sector and the power sector, Canada is showing the rest of the world, well, this is how you're going to, this is, if you want to, you want a template, this is how it works. So that leads us directly to industrial cathedrals, which my friend is a phrase that was coined by my friend Emmett Penny, who's also in the film and does a great job. You know, he's a compelling character, a very likable guy. You know, he's got big tats and he's a bald-headed guy. He's a power lifter. You know, he's just this kind of interesting character, but he's the editor of Grid Brief and, you know, a good friend of mine. But he coined this idea of industrial cathedrals. And it's really about if I would paraphrase what he's saying, this idea of the power plant, the nuclear power plant, as our modern industrial cathedral. It's the apogee of our civilization. It's the best we can do. It's the thing that we think about, you know, when you think long term, what's longer term thinking than what's required to build a cathedral? And that's the analogy that Emmett makes. And so it's a very apt one, because when we think about the grid, when we think about affordability, resilience, reliability, we need long-term thinking, and we're plagued by short-term thinking.
Well, you mentioned the nuclear part before we talk about some of the environmental overview, I guess, to kind of wrap up a little bit.
Sure.
I have not seen part four yet. It's on the agenda this weekend. Do you get into the micro nuclear part of things? I've read a lot of great research on that and how that just seems to be something that people should be aware of, at least.
Sure. Well, look, I'm very hopeful for nuclear power overall. I want the U.S. to be a leader in the deployment of new nuclear. And you're talking about micronuclear, small modular reactors, SMRs, as they're often called. This is a very promising area and one that I think, you know, will develop over time. But in the United States, I have to be very sober about, and I try to be very sober in all of my reporting, but we have to be very sober about the situation in the United States with the regard to new nuclear. And NuScale Power is one of the only companies that's gone public as an SMR company. In fact, their ticker on the New York Stock Exchange is SMR. They are on the verge of bankruptcy, and I wouldn't be surprised if they do go bankrupt, and because they are having trouble getting purchase in the commercial market for a lot of reasons, which I won't go into here. But these SMRs are very promising. So are the gigawatt scale reactors, but it's going to require patience. It's going to require patient capital, and it's going to require the proper regulatory framework. It's going to require fuel. All of these things have to come together to make this new generation of reactors and reactor deployment work at scale.
Just for a background, the fifth episode has almost 70,000 viewers, which is about 10 times what the other four have. It's very interesting. And sure, it's because of the title and because it seems current and a sort of current debate.
Yeah. We've been talking, my colleague Tyson Colbert and I've been talking about it. We're pleased with the reception. We're pleased with the very positive reviews we're getting. And we're working on the marketing. And so juicetheseries.com. By all means, everyone listening, check it out. I'm really proud of these episodes, all five of them. I would suggest you read them in sequence from 1 through 5 because they do build on each other. But yes, you're right. There is a lot of interest in nuclear, whether it's SMRs, whether it's gigawatt scale reactors. I think there is a very there's a significant shift underway in thinking around the world about nuclear and the realization that if we're serious about CO2 emissions, we have to get serious about nuclear energy. We have to do it right damn quick.
Robert Bryce is our guest. We have just a few more minutes left with him. Sure. robertbryce.substack.com. One of my final questions would be more, not only is, you know, your takeaway, you want people's takeaway from all five series when they get done watching it, what do you hope people take away from it, I guess is the question, but what do you believe is the energy grid's biggest obstacle right now? I personally believe it has to do with the either the cult or the religion or the movement of the environmentalism, which has more planet of platitudes than realm of reality. But there is a connection with the you know, humans have destroyed the planet, kind of an original sin type of comparison. So we must atone for our actions. That's how I kind of view the energy industry's biggest obstacle right now with the grid. What is yours, I guess, for the energy industry? What do you think the biggest obstacle is?
Well, that's a really, you know, how long do we have again?
Well, we can go a few minutes into overtime. You better.
Now, Jason, that's a really good question. I'm pleased that you asked it because it's a challenging one and one that I haven't thought about. You know, I'm hard pressed to just say we face one challenge when it comes to thinking about the grid. But I think the first issue that we, if we're going to have a new approach, and let me be clear, why did Tyson Culver and I, why did we produce this project? Why did we do this docuseries? Because we wanted to change the conversation. We wanted people to understand what the grid is, why it's being fragilized, and why we ignore that fragility at our extreme peril. So we need to be focused on it. So what's the first order of business? It's education, that we want to change the conversation. And that's the purpose of this project, juicetheseries.com. People need to understand what the grid is, why it matters before we can have that deeper conversation about how we make it more affordable, resilient, reliable. So I guess, our first order of business is we have to catalyze a discussion about it. We have to catalyze more thinking and seriousness about our most important energy network. And after that starts to happen, after we start having a really serious conversation, then I think we can catalyze that next conversation, which is, okay, now what are we going to do, right? Now that we know that it's being vulnerable, increasingly fragilized, and is more and more vulnerable, what are we going to do?
You know, Congress, it should be mandatory for Congress to watch all 5 episodes.
Amen, brother.
One last thing. I'm going to close with something that you like to ask. What gives you hope?
Well, thank you. I'm optimistic to the point of idiocy, to quote the late Molly Ivins. And I am optimistic, and I see the conversation changing. And so what gives me hope is that we are gaining purchase with energy literacy, where people are understanding what is going on better and better. And the challenge is enormous, but so is the opportunity. So both the challenge and the opportunity give me hope.
Robert Bryce is our guest. Of course, you can find him, robertbryce.substack.com, juicetheseries.com, juicetheseries.com. He's also the host of the Power Hungry podcast. And any final thoughts, any final words as we wrap it up today?
Did I mention juicetheseries.com? I don't know if I did or not. If I did,
not yet. No, where can people find that?
At juicetheseries.com. You know, if I had shame, I might kick in sometime. It just hasn't kicked in yet, but it might someday. Yes, well, my Substack is robertbryce.substack.com. The film site is juicetheseries.com. And thanks to both of you for having me on. It's a real pleasure.